something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, we are going to explore the rich and whimsical history of Hever Castle in Kent, England. Hever Castle has a rich and varied history, from its origins as a country house in the 13th century to its transformation into a grand mansion in the 20th century. Amongst its notable residents was the Boleyn family, who lived at Hever Castle in the 16th century and whose daughter, Anne, became the second wife of King Henry VIII. She'll be playing a big part in this story. Joining us as our expert is Dr. Amy Boyington as we delve into the castle's past and discover the stories of the people who lived and worked there, the events that shaped its history, and the unique features that make Hever Castle one of England's most beloved historic landmarks. Amy, very nice of you to join us. How are you today? Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm very well. I'm Dr. Amy Boyington. I'm a historian. I'm a senior properties historian at English Heritage, which is a charity that owns over 400 historic buildings in the UK. It's a fantastic place. Do check it out. And yeah, outside of that, I do lots of TikToks about history. So if you're on that platform, do check it out.
I sadly haven't had the good fortune to visit Hever Castle yet. So could you just paint me a picture of what I'm seeing if I was there right now looking at it?
Yeah, so Hever Castle is in Kent, which is a very beautiful part of England. And imagine we're standing in front of it right now. It's sort of a rectangular building. It looks like a castle, but it doesn't have any round turrets. It's a rectangular building surrounded by a rectangular moat, so a ditch with water. And then in the middle, if we're looking up at the centre, there's a bridge. It probably used to be a drawbridge, but now it's just a permanent structure. Across the bridge, you go through the gatehouse, and then you come into this small little courtyard. And it's quite cosy because it wasn't the largest building. It was kind of domestic and homely, but very impressive at the same time. And then if you look up around all of the sides, you can see sort of timber framed buildings. So that means, you know, like black and white sort of structures. It's not stone on the interior because that was a sort of cheaper way of building. But yes, you get the feel like you're really stepping back in time.
Like an armadillo.
Like an armadillo.
Hard on the outside, soft on the inside.
Oh God, yeah. Okay, we'll go with that.
Was there a reason behind that design? I mean, did it have any military intentions?
I mean, when it was originally built, I mean, that was the style of a country house. So it was probably built with the intention of being defensive without really expecting to be defensive, if that makes sense.
Also, what century are we talking about being built in?
Initially, like its origins are in the 13th century. So it's really old.
Really old.
The 1200s.
Yeah, wow.
And then it gets sort of modified and expanded. And we don't have any visuals of this. So we're not quite sure what it looked like. Mm-hmm. So what we see now is, you know, what Anne Boleyn might have seen. And also then how it got sort of a little bit changed in later history. So in the 15th century, mm-hmm. particularly in 1462, Geoffrey Boleyn purchased it. So he was, I think, the great-grandfather of Anne Boleyn.
Right.
So he purchased the estate.
And what does Geoff have a title? What's his job?
Geoffrey Boleyn was actually a sir. He was Sir Geoffrey Boleyn. Mm-hmm. And one of his titles was that he was a Lord Mayor of London from 1457 to 1458, so 1 year. It's not that impressive, but I mean,
no, just a,
I'm not going to knock it.
No, better than I've done.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Okay, so yeah, he bought it. And at this time, the family name was spelt Bullen, so B-U-L-L-E-N. It later got changed to look more French by Anne Boleyn.
We've had this on the podcast before. There's a lot of people trying to be a bit Frenchy.
Oh, yeah.
Was that just like a fashionable thing
to
be?
It was. It was seen as more sophisticated. Because if you think about the Norman conquest, which, you know, 1066, yep. William the Conqueror came over, mm-hmm. the French came over and took over. And so a lot of the oldest families in this country have this French or Norman sort of ancestry. And that was seen at the time as way more sophisticated and high status than just the Saxon names.
Sure.
And so I feel like that kind of, it carried on through the centuries. And then in the 15th century, we have Anne Boleyn and the Tudors. The French were quite kind of seen as sophisticated. And I mean, there was a rivalry there forever. So that played into it.
No, I can see that. Interesting. Mm. I'm trying to think, what's the sort of standard Saxon name? Is that where we get like Smith and all that sort of stuff?
Probably.
I just read it.
My God, I don't even know any standard Saxon names. Yeah, but something like that. Something just really
Dave,
basic.
Dave Saxon. Oh, no, David Saxon.
Oh, I know. Well,
much better.
That does sound better, doesn't it?
It does. I'd like better very much. So Geoff is living in Hever.
Geoff buys it. Yeah, he's living there. And over sort of the generations of the Boleyn family, they sort of add to the house. They update it. They make it more fashionable. There's a great hall. They sort of just make it more modern and more sort of high status. And so then eventually in about 1504/1505, we have Thomas Boleyn inherit it from his father. Thomas Boleyn is Anne Boleyn's father. So that's how we're getting it. And so he then raises his children there. So we have Anne Boleyn.
Yeah, talk us through the Boleyn. Imagine them all singing Edelweiss as they go to sleep on the stairs. There are loads of them.
There's only three that survive.
Okay.
So first of all, we have Thomas Boleyn. And Thomas Boleyn marries Lady Elizabeth Howard. So she's an aristocrat. She was a daughter of the Duke of Norfolk. And so this was a really important match for Thomas Boleyn.
Is he's punching up?
He is, massively. Because the daughter of a duke is like as high as you can get unless you marry into royalty.
How's he done this then?
He was a courtier, so he had sort of worked his way up and he was now working at the court, so court of Henry VII, so Henry VIII's father, and then slowly but surely he just got, you know, more and more important positions within that court. So for example, he was at the wedding of Catherine of Aragon and Prince Arthur, so he was you know, right sort of in that circle. And
has he done this just by being a socialite, or has he done it by doing good deeds, or all this sort of stuff?
He was very competent. He was
clearly. So, this guy's a legend.
Yes. So he was on the make, and he was also had the like intelligence and work ethic to get him there. And so then he marries Lady Elizabeth Howard. So this is it. He's got actual links now to one of the top dukes in the country, the Duke of Norfolk. And so they then have children. So initially they live at Blickling, which is in Norfolk. So that's another house that was part of the estate. And they have a number of children. Some of them die in infancy, but we have Mary and then George. We never really know because their birth dates were not recorded. Or if they were recorded, we've lost them, which seems phenomenal that we don't really know the birth dates of these children.
So they could be any combination.
Mary seems to always be the eldest.
Okay.
So Mary Boleyn, and then we have either George or Anne, or Anne or George. So.
I'm gonna go Anne then George.
You think the boys in the middle?
I think the boys at the end. I reckon they kept on having women, and then went, I need a, you know, the classic.
Yeah, maybe.
I need a son.
Yeah, maybe.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay.
So
three kids.
Three kids.
Survive.
Yes.
But remember, there are others that die in infancy. Or
right.
Die when they're children. That was very, very common. So we have these three kids, and their childhood home is Hever Castle, which is why we're talking about that today.
Yes.
And so they grew up there. They had a fairly normal education for high-status children. And the girls were taught French, and they were taught languages, and George also had a similar education, but he was probably taught more sort of mathematics and politics as, you know, suitable for a male.
Yeah, men, these are blue subjects and these are pink subjects.
Sadly, yes. That is, tragically, yeah.
But everyone also learns French.
Yeah, well,
again, they're still obsessed with this.
Yes, exactly. It was really important because they would have also learned Latin, and often girls didn't learn Latin, but I think that Anne Boleyn had a rudimentary sort of knowledge of it, so
she's quite clever, right?
She is, yeah. She was bright, for sure. And she liked learning and reading, and that did get her in trouble a little bit later on. But yeah, she was bright. And then when they were teenagers, so when the girls were teenagers, they were sent over to Europe, because by this point Thomas Boleyn had risen up the ranks and he was now an ambassador. So he was sort of representing
this guy,
England.
Man,
yeah.
He's nothing but net the entire
just
time.
Just kept going and going and going.
Awesome.
And that's, in that way, you can kind of see how they were a gentry family, and then you have Anne Boleyn, you can kind of see how he managed to sort of get his daughter to become a queen, which is so remarkable.
Absolutely. Although, was that totally in agreement with her? Or was he a bit pushy?
I think both.
Oh, she wanted it as well?
I think it was a combination of the two. But we'll get to that in a bit. Mary and Anne, when they were in their teenagers, they went over to the Netherlands, and then they were at the French court.
Is this like a sort of Tudor gap year?
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
To find themselves,
to learn.
A full moon party over there in wherever.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh no, it's just like dancing all the time and sleeping around quite a lot, actually. So yeah, it's very similar.
Would they have slept around a lot?
Well, they weren't supposed to, but there was a rumour that Mary was the mistress of the French king at the time. So perhaps, you don't know.
the Boleyn family.
I know. But then there's also this other flip of the coin that maybe her name was being sullied by gossipers. So we don't know for sure. It's not like they wrote love letters to each other.
That's a shame. That's
it's tricky.
Keep the receipts, as they say on social media these days, but we've got no letters, no proof.
I know.
So they're on this gap year then?
Yeah, gap year, had a great time. Mary came back earlier because she was married off. Anne Boleyn stayed out there a bit longer.
The amount of gap years that happens on, sorry. Got to go back. No, you're not doing Bali, mate. You've got to go back and get married.
Got to go back home. And then in 1522, Anne Boleyn was recalled home. And she joined the entourage of Catherine of Aragon, who was King Henry VIII's first wife.
Right. And probably, because obviously we know what happened.
Yeah.
She would have got on at the start, though, right?
Sure. I mean, yeah, why not? She was a lady-in-waiting. She was there to serve the Queen. And yeah. But at this time, Mary Boleyn, so the elder Boleyn girl, was the mistress of King Henry VIII. So that's already going on. So the Boleyns are already sort of in Catherine's face a bit. And, you know, they're not in the greatest of favours with her.
And Catherine will have definitely known about
that. Yeah, 100%. But she always knew. But she was really stoic and always thought it's just another side piece who will just come and go. Mm. And that's what happened with Mary, actually. It's rumoured that she might have had two children with Henry VIII, but he didn't acknowledge them. So we don't know. Because Mary was also married, remember? And yeah. Interesting things.
Oh, yeah, God, what happened to Mary's husband? What happened to him? Did he?
Well, he was around, obviously.
He was around.
He was a courtier, but he was basically, you know, if the king chose your wife to have fun with, you'd kind of let that be. And I think he got maybe some land or a title, you know, something to buy him off.
There you go. Have this field, I'm going to go and shag your missus.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Lovely stuff.
So, yeah, that happened. And
would any of these affairs have happened back at Hever Castle? Or
right, well, this is, if we're going to skip ahead a bit. So during this time, so Henry got bored of Mary, as he did. He got bored of many.
Very low attention. ADHD, I reckon, old Henry. Undiagnosed.
Or something else. Anyway, so he spots Anne Boleyn. So remember, Anne has come to England. She's sexy. She's
with it.
She's got the new French sort of fashion going on.
She's got an eyebrow piercing, ankle bracelets, tattoo, dreadlocks.
She's super, like,
she smokes
attractive.
Some joints.
She's, you know, she's just really catching people's eye because she's just looking so fresh and different, and she's witty and exciting and really catches Henry VIII's eye. And he falls completely for her and he wants her to be his mistress. And she's like, no. And so
she's like, no.
Yeah, no.
Can she say no?
Yeah, she did. She played it really well. She basically, she said, no, you know, I'm too virtuous. I can't. I've seen what you've done to my sister. You know, I don't want to be just, you know, chucked to the side.
To be fair, she's got a good, strong argument there.
Right. So she was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. So she actually goes back to Hever Castle to sort of cool it, you know, so to put Henry off. Put Henry off? I don't know. Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have Henry VIII's love letter survive. And
we've got the receipts.
We have the receipts.
We do, nice.
I know. And six of them were sent to her when she was at Hever Castle. So, you know, he really was trying to get to her.
Can we have a flavour of the context of these love letters?
He calls her boobs. Pretty
ducky. He calls her boobs.
Pretty duckies.
Call her boobs. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Henry.
Henry, I know.
You sure duck is not just a predictive text correction?
Can you imagine?
Well, I think it's about ducking time we hear one of these love letters, don't you?
Okay, so for example, I'm just going to read like the start of this letter two, it's called. It says, "My mistress and friend, my heart and I surrender ourselves into your hands, beseeching you to hold us, commended to your favour, and that by absence your affection to us may not be lessened." So, you know, it's very Tudor, very
starts old, out very eloquent.
Very oldie English, but he always calls her to my mistress, which is, you know, because she was like Mistress Boleyn.
Yeah, mistress isn't like a insult.
No, that's just it's like madam, you know, sir, madam, you know, like, oh, madam. Okay. This is the ending of one of Henry VIII's love letters to Anne Boleyn.
There's a pain in my head. Wishing myself, especially an evening, in my sweetheart's arms, whose pretty duckies I trust shortly to kiss. Written by the hand of him that was, is, and shall be yours by his own will. Mm. HR. Wow. HR makes it sound official. Like it goes for, thank you very much for your involvement in this sexual encounter. It's HR.
Yeah, so there you go. You know, hot and heavy stuff, right?
That's pretty raunchy stuff.
It's very raunchy. That,
yeah, that's...
And yet she still said no. Can you believe? She was like, nah, I want a ring on it.
Yeah, yeah, I want a ring on it. Yeah, these duckies are going to waddle off.
And so that's what happened, you know. He actually pushed away Anne Boleyn, who was so popular. Like, she was the Queen of Hearts.
So she's now just... She's still in Hever Castle,
yeah,
batting away all these
yes,
affections.
Exactly.
Is she doing anything there?
They entertained a lot, so they would have parties there. Guests would come. They were, you know, the Boleyns were on the make, remember, as a whole family now. And now yeah. that she had caught the attention of the king, they had loads of guests coming over, seeking favour, seeing if she could, you know, talk to the king on their behalf.
Do you not imagine her and her dad, Thomas, sit down and he goes, what? What do you mean you said no?
Yes,
you
no.
idiot.
I think so. They were worried.
Yeah, the parents were.
Yeah, not necessarily the mother.
Be queen, you idiot. That's what we're doing this for. What are you doing?
And also, don't forget her uncle, the Duke of Norfolk. So her mother's brother, he was very pushy. He was like, you need to really get in there with the king.
Yeah.
He was not the nicest man. So
was he not? No.
He also pushed later on another of his nieces, which was Catherine Howard.
Bloody hell.
The fourth wife. Yeah. Yeah. Fifth wife, sorry. Both of whom got
the chop.
Their chop.
Yes.
So at Hever, they had lots of land. They loved to go hunting. And mm-hmm. Henry VIII loved that too. Anne Boleyn was a really good horsewoman. So they did this a lot. And, you know, they were just like young and fun, basically. Catherine of Aragon was also, you know, she was great, but she was much more stoic and sort of queenly, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, she took her role very seriously.
Older as well, right?
A bit older than Henry. Yeah, not that much older. But yeah, Anne Boleyn was young and fun and sexy.
Oh, she was older than Henry.
Yeah.
Really?
A little bit, yeah. Because remember, because she was initially married to Arthur, Henry's brother, remember?
Of course.
And they were a similar age. Henry was the younger sibling. Henry wasn't meant to be king, but then his brother died, so he became the heir and king.
Yeah, I see. It's all very incestuous. It's all
it
just
is.
If this was Hinge
it
or
is.
Tinder, the
I know.
It'd only be like a mile radius they were scanning for, wouldn't it?
It's crazy. But at least siblings weren't marrying or uncles and nieces.
No.
We get that with the Habsburgs and on the continent a lot.
We've got to find out what is the bit that finally makes her crumble and go, oh, all right, I'll...
Well, Henry VIII promises that they'll get married. And that's when he starts to...
And if we know anything about Henry, he's a man who keeps his word.
Oh, sure.
He's never gone back on that
exactly.
promise.
Exactly. And so but when he actually starts to break away from the Church of Rome and establish the Church of England...
Oh, of course, that's when...
So
yeah.
that was a pretty good indication that he meant business.
Yeah.
And also, remember, he really wanted a boy. He needed an heir. So yes. even if he did love Anne Boleyn, he was driven to get that son. Like, he was stressed
Is
about
Catherine...
it. So that was what was driving it, as well as his love, you okay. know. And so then he manages to break away from the Church of Rome and establish his own church in England, where he becomes the supreme head. And then in 1533, they secretly marry. And some people think, had they done the deed? You know, was she already pregnant? Do we need to, like, hurry up and get this marriage done?
I was going to say, why secretly?
Well,
if you've just changed the entire religion of the country, why would you then go, oh, but don't tell anyone that we're actually getting
It was
married.
Weird. I think just the pressure. They're like, let's just do it, you know. Whatever, let's get on with it. It was quite a quiet, small affair, which is, again, surprising. But Catherine was still alive, Catherine of Aragon.
Didn't he send her off and gave her a bunch of land and went, oh, sorry?
Not even that. He pretty much he treated her really badly in the end. Like, he shoved her out of the palaces. He wanted her and her daughter to sign the Act of Succession, which meant that they acknowledged the new queen, you know, Anne Boleyn, mm-hmm. and whatever child they had as the new heir. So pushing Mary out.
Jesus Christ.
And obviously...
I've had some breakups in my time, but never
harsh.
Have I been asked
harsh.
To
yeah.
sign a contract of succession to the
I
new
know.
Boyfriend of my ex can go... It's all mine now.
I know. And then Henry also didn't allow Mary, his daughter, to see her mother. So Catherine of Aragon and Mary Tudor weren't allowed to see each other, which is really cruel, you know, just to make them sign this document. So he was a bit of an arse, just to put it mildly.
Yes.
So anyway, he marries Anne Boleyn and then she gets pregnant and everybody rejoices, like, oh my God, this is what it's all for. She's pregnant, yay, yay, yay. And then it's a girl. So,
ooh, yeah, tough.
It was bad. And so the Boleyn family, you can imagine them at Christmas at Hever going, ah, you know, stressing out because, oh my God, it's a girl.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh, the amount of conversations around that dinner table at Hever Castle must have been incredible. I'd love to have seen a Christmas there.
Mm.
Did Henry ever go and visit Hever?
He must have been, but we don't know every instance. I'm sure he did, but I haven't got documentary proof.
Go and see the in-laws.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a little walk around.
I know, because that's the thing, right? Anne then becomes, she's crowned queen. And the Boleyns have risen up to the top. They're like the premier family now.
Yeah.
So that's huge. And they get given titles. I think I'm going to check it. So Thomas Boleyn becomes an earl. And so that's, you know, huge.
That is huge.
It's not a dukedom, but an earldom's not too bad. So as a result, because you have that title, so he was given an earldom, and then a courtesy title was given to George Boleyn. So a courtesy title means you don't actually have any lands or anything with it. It's just that they kind of always come in two. So if you are given an earldom, you normally get a sort of a lesser title for the heir of that family. And so he also got titled as well.
So George got a title without any land or extra benefits. Not even 2-for-1 cinema tickets. What a joke. Might as well have just made him a jester. Actually, do they have a jester at Hever Castle?
Not necessarily there. It was too small a place. But they could have hired in, you know, entertainment for parties and balls and that kind of thing. Yeah, for sure.
I'm thinking now, the sort of scope of staff that are at Hever Castle.
Yeah, so massive.
It'd be massive. It would be massive.
Is it
sort of Downton Abbey level or?
So Tudor times are slightly different.
Of course.
Because.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm jumping too many centuries.
Yeah, see, chronological. So yeah, it's sorry, very important. Yeah, no. But yeah, they would have had a huge retinue of staff. And back then, you know, labour was cheap, so they probably would have had way more just to look impressive. Mm-hmm. And the kitchens would have been vast. Like if you've ever been to Hampton Court Palace, the Tudor kitchens there are huge because they have to be producing so much food for feasts and parties and things. So yeah, no, they would have had a lot of staff.
So the Boleyns obviously were known for throwing their parties.
Well, I imagine. So as one of the big families, why wouldn't they?
Yeah, do we have any record of what the best party was?
Henry VIII threw the best parties.
Yeah, I imagine I imagine Henry VIII with a sort of a wild boar and an apple in it.
During Henry VIII's reign, turkeys came into sort of fashion to be eaten during Christmas time, yeah.
How did that happen?
Because they came over from the New World, you know, because we were all of that.
New World turkey. That sounds funny to me, a New World turkey.
So, yeah, and he basically, they started to be reared and domesticated, so in Norfolk and East Anglia. And then they were sort of they were so big, so they were seen as quite a prestigious bird to eat.
Sure.
And boar as well was another, you know, thing for Christmas. So all of these, it was just status.
I heard this thing, I don't know if you can confirm or deny, about hunting boar.
Uh-huh.
So you know how nowadays people say that fox hunting is like the upper class sport?
Yeah.
But actually back in the day, boar was the upper class and fox hunting was the lower class. But then all the boars got caught, so they hadn't got an option but to do fox hunting.
Yeah, that's very true. And also they would hunt deer as well.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Is there hunting grounds near Hever Castle?
Yeah, there would have been, absolutely, because, you know, Henry loved it, so why not? And also,
something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington.
so I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He had, you know, Richmond Park was a hunting estate. Like, there was loads of hunting estates.
So Anne, being born and raised in this castle, when do you think was the last time she frequented it?
Well, some people say that she's never actually left because there's apparently a ghost that is seen at Christmas time.
At Christmas time specifically?
Apparently so, yeah. Walking across the bridge. Who knew?
Or across the bridge?
Well, not a bridge across the River Eden, which is sort of flows nearby. And also sometimes she's spotted around and about. We should go with that one. Yeah. But you know what? We haven't actually talked about what happened to Anne, like her actual demise. That's pretty sad, right? Tragic. We can't do this whole build up and not mention her.
Yes, that's a good point. Because if you actually don't know what happened to Anne Boleyn, and if you don't, sorry about the ghost stuff, because spoiler alert, we should actually probably tell people what happened to her and how.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we left her when she had a girl, right?
She had a girl?
Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nightmare.
Disappointment.
Yeah.
But she actually turned out to be a fantastic queen. Anyway, that's by the by. So Anne Boleyn gets pregnant again. Whoop, everybody's so excited. This time it's going to be a boy.
Definitely.
Right? It's going to be
absolutely.
A boy. Then, anyway, Henry VIII is jousting. And he gets knocked off his horse and he's actually unconscious for more than an hour. People think he's dead. And so Anne Boleyn, apparently, this is a stressful time because he's not coming round. He's knocked out cold. Sure. What happens to her? What happens to the Boleyns? And she miscarries after this. We don't know whether it's triggered by that. And it was a boy.
No.
No.
Oh, no.
I know.
And oof. Who was it who knocked...
Oh, God, I don't know. But they didn't die.
You're dead.
I know.
You're not surviving, mate. You've knocked off the king and caused the queen to have a miscarriage.
But can you imagine the terror that she must have felt? Like, this pressure. Like, it's amazing that she conceived and got pregnant anyway because she's so stressed and the trauma, and she knows what happens if she doesn't give a boy this time. It's a boy. It's dead. And oh my God, Henry VIII immediately cools on her. He just goes off her completely. So Anne Boleyn is now, it's over, essentially. She tries to, you know, convince the king we can still have another kid, but he's already spotted his next wife, Jane Seymour. And he's already sort of enamored by Jane, and he's just doesn't really care about Anne Boleyn anymore. Mm. And then this is where all of Anne Boleyn's enemies and detractors start to circulate these rumors that she's she's having incestual relations with her brother and that she's flirting with other men. And so...
Where was the brother at this point?
Well...
His mates just went, have you heard what's going on in London?
Oh, God, a nightmare. Yeah, but all of a sudden, it just, this is, by the way, the year is 1536, dramatic year. And poor old Anne, everything had been going well. She'd only been queen for 3 years, right? And now it's over, pretty much. She's then arrested. She's taken to the Tower of London.
And part of the gossip was the six finger thing is where that comes from. Yeah. It's like, oh, she's a witch and
exactly.
all that sort of stuff.
And that somehow she'd caused the death of her baby and that kind of thing. You know, like people were really cruel to her. They wanted her taken down, and a lot of the men didn't like that she had had such a hold on Henry, you know, as a woman. They didn't like that. They wanted, and then she hadn't had a son. So it was all spiraling out of control.
Does this then go back to, it obviously ends that she gets beheaded.
Yes.
On the gallows. And does her death then affect the whole family and therefore their place in Hever Castle?
Yeah, exactly. So basically what happens is she's beheaded. The Boleyns are then in disgrace. So George Boleyn, the brother, is also executed because, remember, he's found guilty of having sex with his sister, which is nuts, right? Not true, but... It was like a done deal, you know. Like, Henry wanted Anne out of the way, he wanted to marry Jane, and so this is all sort of concocted to like happen. So yeah, the family's in disgrace. They leave court, they're sort of banished for a bit. They retire back to Hever Castle. Mm. Can you imagine, like, 3 years ago the glory days were happening, and I don't think they could even believe it.
Yeah.
Mary
then I sat around the Christmas table with a small pigeon.
Yeah.
Just going,
can you
what
imagine?
The hell happened, guys? And we had it all.
And lost two children, right, in one go.
Oh, yeah.
So they have one child left, Mary. And Mary was sort of estranged from her family, so she wasn't there. So it was just Thomas and Elizabeth Boleyn, their house. I don't know. Elizabeth never really recovered. She died a few years later.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think my mum would probably...
Yeah, exactly. And then Thomas Boleyn was like, oh, I'll remarry. Like a nutter. But basically...
What else is he going to do?
Sure.
But
then he died the year later.
Oh, so then, well, that is the other option.
That's the end, right? They don't have an heir, so they kind of lose the house, right? They don't, and so then it goes to the crown, and it is given to Anne of Cleves, who is Henry VIII's fourth wife, the one that he divorces. You know, the one that he thought was too ugly to, you know, do it with.
Although, is that why he divorced her? She went...
Well, partly, yeah, because Hans Holbein went over to Cleves, painted her. He painted her beautifully. Then she
catfished.
No, but the thing is, it's not true. Like, by contemporary account, she was actually good looking. She was not as ugly as everybody says.
No, but was she as good looking as Anne Boleyn?
No.
Definitely not.
And or Jane, you know, Jane Seymour. And also, you know, Henry was old and ugly at this time, getting really fat. But he had the audacity to say...
And gangrenous?
Yeah. Ugh, an ulcerated leg. Nice.
Yeah, you're not so good yourself, actually,
mate.
No. Maybe just be happy.
Anyway, he said he couldn't consummate it with Anne of Cleves. Couldn't do the deed. And so, he divorced her.
That sounds like an excuse for his impotency.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I reckon.
I think so, yeah.
Toxic
but
men.
But interestingly, he gives her Hever as one of her palaces. So she did really
Does
well.
He?
Yeah.
Okay.
She did excellently.
Here's my ex-wife who I had head chopped off old pad.
Have this one. Nice.
Sure, that's the...
And
So she then... Okay, so then it passes to her.
Yes, for her lifetime. And she lived there until her death.
Thank you, Amy, so much. You've been incredibly visceral in your descriptions of Hever Castle and knowledgeable in what happened there.
Excellent.
Where can people find you on social media and stuff if they want to hear more about you?
Yeah, on TikTok, I'm History with Amy.
History with Amy. I'm going to be. I'll be following
out.
That. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Not at all. Thank you.
Poor old Anne Boleyn. She deserved better than a fat man with gout who spreads lies to get his own way. It's not much to ask for, is it? Although, to be fair, with the state of our leaders today, I'm not sure she'd be able to do much better in this century. That's all we've got time for this week. Until next time, keep the receipts, kiss your pretty duckies, and mind your manners. Thanks for listening to Bad Manners. If you like the pod, please share it with your friends. Rate it on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review and make sure you spill the tea on any of your favourite bad manners that we could feature in future episodes. This podcast was produced by Atomize Studios for iHeartRadio. It was hosted by me, Tom Horton. It was produced by Willa Malensky, Rebecca Rappaport, and Chris Attaway. It was executive produced by Faye Stewart and Zad Rogers. Our production manager is Caitlin Paramore, and our production coordinator is Bella Cellini.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.